Okay,
so I'm here with Jonathan Wilson, who is an author. Actually, Jonathan, it'd be better if you introduce yourself, as you'll do a better job than I.
Okay. All right. I'm Jonathan Wilson. I write novels and stories and other kinds of books, and I've just written a book about my lifelong support of Tottenham Hotspur FC, which has lasted more than half a century, and it's called Kick and Run, which is a tactic that I'm sure is familiar to all Spurs supporters, a kick and run memoir with soccer ball. So I'm very glad to be on the podcast.
Why is it called, it's called soccer ball as opposed to football?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm sorry about that, and I hope I don't get beaten up when I come to read in England. I wanted to call it football in England and soccer ball when it was published here, and the publishers said they could only put one title on, they could only do one title. They weren't going to do two covers for the books. And as I've lived in America for much more than half my life, I think they anticipated that I would have maybe they thought I would have bigger sales here than there, so I don't know. So they took the risk that no one will buy it in England because it says soccer in the title. But there it is. But I think there have been other books with soccer in the title that have sold in the UK.
I think we've kind of sort of adopted it now. We're kind of over, we're kind of past it a little bit. The book is essentially about your thoughts on how you've lived your life in relation to football, and a lot of it's about kind of anecdotes that you tell. Some of them are really, really, really good and really funny. But how would you describe your book to someone who possibly doesn't typically read football books? Is that what it is? I mean, it is
like
about
a
football.
Laguna or something like that.
Yeah, someone like that.
It doesn't read books at all. how would I describe my book? Well, it's a book about soccer is the sort of leitmotif. So it begins with growing up Jewish in London, playing soccer, playing football in school, playing for a club, playing at college. It's about different areas of my life that have been affected by football, as a supporter of Spurs, as a watcher of football, as a player, as a journalist. I covered the World Cup in 1994 for The New Yorker, and I blogged about the last World Cup for an online magazine. As a coach of my kids in America, coaching soccer in America. So it's about all different aspects of my life, and soccer is the kind of string that holds the whole thing together, holds the narrative together.
Okay, so why are you Spurs then? I mean,
why am I Spurs? It's obvious, isn't it? can one support another team? I didn't know that.
Absolutely.
Okay, so when I was about 10, my friend Stephen Levinson's dad had season tickets, and he took me to a pre-season game at White Hart Lane between the Blues and the Whites. The Whites were the first team, which included Blanche Flanell, Norman McKay, John White, all these like extraordinary players who went on to win the double. And the Blues were the reserves. And I remember this, they had this guy, John Hollowbred, in goal. Bill Brown was the goalkeeper for the first team. And I went to the game, and I was very young. This was before we'd won anything. And I remember, Dave McKay scored this incredible goal, left foot shot, Hollowbred diving, and he was just cool, and he turned around to near where I was standing, and he just sort of smiled. It was pre-season, nothing mattered, and it was kind of like a dream, and after that I was Spurs, and that was it. No one in my family was interested in football at all, and remain uninterested to this day. Not my parents, not my two brothers, but I was I've been obsessed with football since the age of 7, but I didn't get attached to Tottenham until I was 9. Later, I found out that my mother's first job, actually out of Pittman's secretarial school, had been on Seven Sisters Road working for the Africa Canning and Packing Corporation, which sounds like something out of Joseph Conrad, but was actually the real job that she had. And so it turns out my mother was really Tottenham too, so yeah. There I was, and that's it. You can't change.
So when you kind of realised that you was Tottenham, and going to the game is obviously crucial as a kind of rite of passage for a lot, actually not so much nowadays, but certainly when I was a kid, if you supported a team, and certainly that they were your local team, you went because it was cheap or right. affordable. Tell us a little bit about, certainly because none of your family supported Spurs or were interested in football, how did you manage to get to the games, or did you?
Well, it was first I couldn't go on to Saturday games because my family was an observantly Jewish family, so my parents wouldn't let me go to any games on Saturday. So I could only go to midweek games. And at first it was mainly through, very early, it was through my friend's dad, who would occasionally take me if he had an extra ticket. Later I would go on my own, you know, which was take the train from Dollis Hill to Manor House, take a bus from Manor House, and try to go to, you know, when my in my early teens, I would simply go by myself and go to the games. I mean, sometimes I would get locked out. You know, in the book I talk about how the first game that Greaves and Gilzean played together, which was a home game against Everton, you know, it took me forever to get to the ground. And when I got there, the ground was full. I couldn't get a ticket. I had to go home. I had to go back home.
Incredible. Yeah. Okay, so as you know, you've mentioned a couple of times your
pleasant experience, by the way, because someone wrote Jew on the back of my anorak on the bus back to Manor House Station. And, you know.
Well, this is a kind of unfortunate segue then into my next question, because what was it like being a young Jewish man going to football at that time? This is well before, you know, Tottenham fans had adopted the word Yid.
Right.
Was there, right. You know, how was it?
Well, it didn't, apart from that one spectacularly awful incident, it was not unlike being anyone else going to a Tottenham game. But I certainly, you know, I started going to Spurs in the early 1960s. Tottenham were not the Yids, you know, they were just Tottenham. And, you know, Jewish friends of mine supported Tottenham, they supported West Ham, they supported Chelsea, they supported Arsenal, but Tottenham was not identified as, were not identified as the Yids in those early years. So it was no different to going to see anyone else. But, you know, but also I lived near Wembley Stadium, so I didn't only go to Spurs games. And, you know, and I remember being very excited to go see Bobby Smith play for England against Spain. I don't know, 1960 something, and England won 4-2. And I remember, always remember, I was, of course, ecstatic because Smith had scored. And, you know, he's kind of ball of a forward and didn't have a lot of skill. And he scored with this extraordinary chip towards the end of the game. And I remember he was interviewed afterwards and someone said, asked him why he'd done that. And he said, I heard a voice in my head that said, chip it, Bobby, chip it. You know, it's like genius. But so being Jewish it was no different from being anybody else. You know, it was just one of the crap.
Was you aware then when, I mean, how did, because, I mean, as most people remember it now, Tottenham are have a large Jewish fan base. Realistically, as we've discussed previously, it's not necessarily true. Lots of other fans have. There's a large Jewish fan base at many clubs. But yeah. Then, what changed at Spurs, do you think?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, one thing I'll tell you is that, you know, in the 60s, Arsenal, I think, had more Jewish fans than Tottenham. And they would occasionally put in their program. I think Arsenal actually, when it was Jewish holiday like Yom Kippur, Arsenal would put something in their program, you know, wishing good things to their Jewish fans. Tottenham never did. So in a way, it was almost a surprise that it was Tottenham rather than Arsenal who became the Yids. And I've never been able to quite figure out what it was that that brought that. I mean, it. You know, people have all kinds of ideas. They always say, oh, Tottenham has a large Jewish fan base. But as you know, the Jewish population of England is only something like 250,000. And what does a large Jewish fan base mean? I mean, you know, if there are 40,000 people at White Hart Lane, it's not, I'm sure it's not like 1/6 of the Jewish population of England who are there every week. But it really means a small Jewish fan base, but not as small as some other clubs. But why Tottenham became identified as the Yids, is a mystery in a way. I'm never quite sure what year that happened. And I think I was out of the country by then because I'd moved out of England in 1976. Although you told me that actually it happened, that there are people who claim they can specify the actual date when Tottenham became the Ids, and I think you said it was something like 1971.
Yeah, I just before we kind of started doing this interview, I'd reread the article and it was 78.
Yeah, I thought it was later. Yeah,
we're going to publish that article. We haven't yet. I'm just going back to him finally to check over some of the facts, and we will publish it. But he did say 78.
That sounds right to me. That because I'd left in 76, and then it was a revelation to me sometime later to discover that we were the Yids.
Okay, I mean look, that's an excellent anecdote that I'm going to ask you to tell in a second. But if he said that it was a particularly bad trip to Leeds, where they decided that something had to be done, and perhaps.
Right.
I'd imagine there were at least more Jewish people in London or certainly near Tottenham than there ever were and still remain to be in Leeds, but I may be wrong.
Well, Leeds had a big Jewish community.
Oh, really? God, I don't know then. Who knows?
Leeds could have been the Yids very easily because Leeds actually had, I think after London, Manchester and Leeds had the second largest Jewish communities in the country. Leeds had a very big Jewish, not very big, I mean, it had a small Jewish community, but after London, it was one of the biggest. Let's call them the Yids.
Just turn it around once more. Add more fuel to this fire. Okay, so...
Billy Brennan was Jewish, wasn't he? No, I'm kidding.
So we don't know then, I guess, but... Wait, so you was away, you spend the rest of your life, and to this day still live in America... But you told me about this, you know, when you came back and it was almost this, you exposed to it to the extreme.
Yeah. I came back to go to the Worthington, you know, Worthless Cup final, and we were playing Blackburn in Cardiff, and I was with my nephew, James, lifelong Spurs like me, and, we were on the train and we got off the train and suddenly everyone starts chanting, Yids, 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 Yids. And I thought it was like the Nuremberg rally. You know, I didn't understand what was going on. I said, what is this? What's happening? And he said, it's all right. We're the Yids. It's us. We're the Yids. And you know, then we got in the ground and everyone was chanting Yid Army and I was amazed. And then they unfurled an Israeli flag, which was taken down by the stewards because you couldn't have a flag. And I said to my nephew, you know, a Tottenham supporter is like huge political supporters of Israel. And he said, no, most people can find it on the map. You know, so that was my first real experience of Tottenham Yids, of being a Yid. It was also my first experience of flying several thousand miles to lose a game against the Blackburn.
Let's not talk about that.
Which was like not what I had intended when I bought those tickets, the plane tickets.
How did you feel though? I mean, was you shocked or was you disturbed? I mean, how did it make you feel?
Yeah, it was disconcerting. It was oddly disconcerting, but also somehow liberating in some way. I mean, I began to quite like it as the game went on. You know, it was sort of okay. You know, I didn't really mind.
Was it odd then that there was obviously largely non-Jewish people chanting things that are completely...
Yes. Well, yeah, that is kind of... I mean, I think as I've talked to you in our earlier conversation, I mean, one of the things... I mean, I'm for the Yid chant. I'm not against it at all. But I do think you have to be aware that a lot of people, that there is maybe a small element, I hope it's only a small element, chanting Yid in support of Spurs, who were it not for a kind of accident of geography and allegiance, would be chanting Yid in quite another way at Tottenham supporters. You know, so I don't think it's entirely benign in that regard. I think the chant itself, I think, you know, it's very similar. I mean, in that way, it's different from, say, African Americans, you know, using the N-word on each other, but not or but not but white people can't say it at all. Yeah. You know, in that way it's a little different, because if all Tottenham supporters were Jewish and were chanting Yids, it would be slightly less complicated than the current situation. But in a way, I think it has had it has had the effect of defusing the impact of the word, and I think that's good. You know, it seems to me that it doesn't carry the weight that it used to. And I wrote a piece of, a couple of years ago where I'd read that there was a movement in England to have the Oxford English definition of a Jew, of a Yid, be changed from what is a fairly sort of anti-Semitic definition to simply a supporter of Tottenham Hotspur, you know, which I think would be great, you know, that would, if that was a sort of worldwide meaning of the word Yid.
I think that's a part of the argument, certainly from many Spurs fans that are not Jewish, and one that I've kind of preached a bit, is that actually the word doesn't necessarily just mean Jew anymore, or isn't an offensive word. It, through time and as language changes, it's adopted a new meaning. And many times, there's been many examples in the history of English language where a word means two things despite it being sounding phonetically exactly the same.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, you know, that isn't the case in Eastern Europe, let's say, you know, where they're still chanting Zhid and meaning it.
Yeah, of course.
A flattering fashion, you know. But I think in England, you know, it's rather like if you repeat a word enough, it sort of draws its sting in a way. Yeah. And it seems to me fairly benign. You know, by the way, you never hear on American TV, you can never hear the crowd chanting Yid Army. It's somehow strangely muffled. And I don't know if you can hear it on English TV, but you can on US TV.
You can hear it if you know it's being chanted, I think. I think that as time goes on, we'll hear it less because the microphones in that area of the stadium will be turned up. And that's fine. That's probably a good diplomatic way to resolve this situation. There is this kind of very kind of dubious theory that the new TV deal from America has somehow forced the FA's hand in dealing with this situation, because obviously it's not something that they necessarily understand on for face value. So someone tuning in to watch a game between Spurs and Arsenal and suddenly hearing this chanting, they're going to be thinking, what is going on? Similar to the way you felt when you first heard it, maybe.
Yeah, but I think, you know, that probably goes for anything that they might think is offensive. You know, I'm sure they're going to, you know, I have a favourite YouTube of Arsenal running out on the field and Tottenham fans chanting wankers very loudly, but you're also not going to hear on US TV.
Very true.
It is complicated in the sense that it comes at a time when the FA is trying quite rightly to stamp racism out of football. You know, I mean, there are awful things that have been chanted, and, you know, and the West Ham gas chamber stuff is really awful and appalling. And a lot of the stuff that African-American and Caribbean footballers and African footballers have to hear is just really, really ugly and really bad. And, but so it's hard, it's difficult, you know, to make that case. Say, well, yeah, those things are all awful, but chanting Yid is just fine. You know, it's fine as long as Tottenham supporters are chanting Yid. I think it is okay. I mean, I hate to say it, but I think, because I think David Cameron was right. I mean, I hate to say he was right about anything, but I think in this case, he was actually right.
Yeah. Know? I mean, the kind of ironic thing, depressingly ironic, so because during the game against West Ham, they found a way to chant very offensive things that didn't contain the word Yid, but still made reference to Adolf Hitler and the Holocaust, but removed words and segments of their chants and replaced them with, so that the you understood exactly what they were saying, but they weren't doing anything illegal because it was insinuation. It was the chant was he's coming for you, he's coming for you. We can't say his name. He's coming for you. Everyone knows what they meant.
Well, you know,
and you know, and what David Baddiel, in my opinion, has done is raised this to such a level where you're getting Neanderthals, you're giving Neanderthals intelligence. You're making them think about what they're doing.
Right. Yeah, at least they've been invented. I mean, I remember once I was at a game at Chelsea with a friend had taken me to, and they were playing Fiorentina. And at the time, Chelsea had about 9 Italian players on their team. And Chelsea fans were yelling the most extraordinary abuse at the Italian team about Italians, as if they didn't have 9 Italian players on their team. And then you suddenly realize it's actually not really about Italy or Italians or anything. It's about the other team. It's about otherness, you know. It's about how to attack the other, and but I think you're right that certainly it's the case that if anti-Semite, nobody is not going to become an anti. Nobody's anti-Semitism is going to be reduced in a way by banning the Yid chant. The anti-Semites are going to be anti-Semitic anyway, and they'll find, as the West Ham fans did, inventive ways to get around it, anti-Semitic things. I mean, there's no getting around the fact that anti-Semitism is a, you know, pernicious thing that has persisted for a couple of thousand years. It's not just going to go away tomorrow. You know, what Spurs fans chant or don't chant doesn't really have much to do with it.
And how do you feel then about kind of this campaign that Baddiel was on to, you know, essentially, I mean, he never asked, to be fair to him, Spurs fans to be arrested. He's merely asking for us to think about why we chant it. I mean, but as someone who you plainly said that you kind of don't want Spurs fans to be banned from saying the word, how do you feel about David Baddiel and the way he's gone about things?
Yeah, I think he's a Wilson lad, isn't he? I think I grew up, but he's younger than me. But how do I feel about it? Well, you know, I think he's entitled to his opinion, and he has a heightened sensitivity to it, and I think, you know, it looks like he's taking the right position. But I don't know, this is going to be a weird thing to say, but it looks like he's taking the right position, but it kind of feels like he isn't. In other words, he's a good person, and he's trying to do a good thing, and he's trying to do the right thing, but he's actually about to remove a certain element of pleasure from Tottenham fans who like chanting Yid Army and who enjoy it and who like singing Jermaine Defoe is a Yiddo. And, you know, and I don't think that really hurts anybody. I don't think, I don't know, it's actually sort of fun in some way. And as I say, I think he's in some way discounting or not counting strongly enough how the chanting in some way diffuses the power of the anti-Semitic chant of Yid.
Yeah.
I think it does. You know, I don't know quite how, but I think it does.
Yeah. I think I agree completely, really. I never felt that by airing his opinion that he's doing anything wrong. He's entitled to it. The thing that rankles with me is the fact that he doesn't kind of... I spoke to him with him on the radio on Jeremy Vine's program, and he was very, very patronizing and dismissive, and more or less said that because I wasn't Jewish, I wasn't allowed to have this conversation with him. I think that's what irritates Spurs fans the most. Not necessarily the ones.
Oh my God, you're not Jewish? You're kidding me. Why didn't you tell me? You can't have this conversation with me. What are you talking about?
Apologies. I should have.
Unbelievable.
Should have stated it at the beginning. I'm very sorry.
You have to tell me. This is incredible.
Let's move on to the 4-4 Jew kind of. What was it? Exhibition?
Yes, it is. It's an exhibition. Yeah.
And it's in London.
It's an exhibition at the Jewish Museum in Camden Town, and I haven't seen it yet, but it looks at the relationship that British Jews have had with football. I don't know, maybe it goes beyond Britain, I'm not sure, have had with football, you know, for more than 100 years. So I'm really looking forward to seeing it, and that's, I'm giving a reading there, a talk there, with stuff out of my book, and I understand that a number of people I went to school with in Kilburn, you know, 40 years ago are coming, so I'm in for some trouble.
If someone wants to come along and listen to you talk, is that, do you have buy tickets, or is it possible for people to come?
Yeah, anybody can come. I think you just have to pay an entrance fee to the museum, which I don't think is very much, and if you show your Tottenham supporters card, I believe it's reduced. No, I'm making
that. That'd be the first time at the Tottenham Oxford membership gave you a reduction to anything. Okay, so what we'll do is in the post and on the podcast, we'll get the dates and times and from your publishers when you're going to be the talk. Yeah.
It's on the web. Sunday, November 3rd at 3 p.m., which is 15 minutes before the end of the game against Everton. So I'm thinking maybe they'll screen it, you know. And
well, you can have
losing 3 unless Lukaku has scored a hat trick.
Oh god,
we'll just switch up.
Yeah. And okay, and you're going to manage to see a game when you're over here?
Well, unfortunately, you know, we're playing away. Well, fortunately, we're playing away that day, and you know, I don't think I'll be able to get to a game. You know, if Spurs were at home, I would definitely have hit up my nephew James, and we would have gone.
Fantastic. And Kick and Run, is it out now? Can people buy it?
It's out tomorrow. It's out tomorrow, and you can get it online. You can order the paperback, or you can order the you know, Kindle. If you know, you can order it. You can order it as an ebook or as a paperback, and I hope it'll be in some bookstores. So yeah.
Okay, well, we'll also publish a link to maybe Amazon or wherever the best place to link it to. The 22nd of October it's out. So if people will be listening to this past, you know, this recording. So we'll have a link on the Fighting Cock as well where you can buy the book. There's all left to say thank you, and come on, you Spurs.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Flav. I really enjoyed it. Yeah, of course.
That's my pleasure. All right.